Following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here is David Littlejohn with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, it is that time of the week. It's the best Tuesday you've had all week, and we are super stoked to be here. I am Dave Littlejohn, host of the True Wealth Show, and I got a studio full today for fun reasons. joining me today,
Justin Brogman.
And Matt Dixon.
Okay, and if you guys don't know, you've got the entire investment team, right? Today it's the Little John investment team, so it is lit.
It's been a while since we've had all three of us in the studio rocking and ready to go all at the same time.
It's been a long time, and to be fair, why did it work out this way? Justin's like,
Well, the last time was your hiking trip that you showed up. Early for.
Right, got back early. Mm-hmm. That was like 3 years ago, I think.
No,
maybe
Matt
two,
was
maybe
still
two.
Here.
Yeah.
I think it was 2 years ago because it wasn't last summer, but it was the
And you
summer
were
before.
Like in your hiking gear even. Like it looked like you had come straight off the mountain into the studio. It
I
was
did.
Pretty awesome.
I
Mosquito
did.
Bites and all.
Came to yes. save us.
No, you guys were doing awesome. And really, so the question was whether or not I was going to make it at all. Mm-hmm. This is funny when somebody says this. I'm pleased to report that we have completed our SEC audit, at least for now.
Yay.
Nice.
Okay. So we'll hear back some of the findings and whatnot. For those of you that are wondering what that means, yes, if we ever hear the story about, well, there are costs associated with doing business because of regulations. Well, in the securities industry, one of those is the Securities and Exchange Commission. Okay, that is our regulatory authority. Now, it's based on the size of our business. If our business was below a threshold, then there's the Oregon Securities Department. And so they would be, I think the department is, I don't know. But anyway, they're the Oregon version of it but there's a federal version if your business is more than a certain size. And for those of you that have listened for a lot of years, you know, thanks to the wonderful support of our community and our clientele that have helped spread the word, we've continued to grow. And now we're being regulated at a federal level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This does not scare me or concern me or anything. I'm okay having regulators involved in this one because I would rather us be doing it right. So I'm okay with getting an audit. Let's catch these things if there was somehow a mistake, because it certainly would not be intentional. That being said, it's part of the cost of doing business too, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So... anyway, thanks guys for being ready to rock. And you have prepared somewhat of an agenda.
Yeah, we were going to try and talk about what it looks like, what it feels like to be a savvy investor.
Okay.
In today's world.
So I want to I see the intelligent investor mm-hmm. outline. I actually would like to allow you all to kind of run with that. The interjection I would add to this one is the emotionally intelligent investor,
mm-hmm.
okay? Which is another thing that I think we ought to work into this one. I see a lot of great stuff here, and we'll see how far we get. But keep in mind, for everybody listening, I want you to think for a moment about there's two different main gauges going on here, and we all have them. Some of I'm going to call it your emotional compass, and then your logical compass. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they point the same way, and sometimes they don't. And the question is, can we utilize some tools or mechanisms to try to help align those things? Or if they're not aligned, if those compasses are pointing in different directions, how to determine which one to listen to?
Mm.
Okay? All right. I think that all wraps up in the intelligent investor. So which of you took the lead on this when you started putting it together?
Matt.
Justin's pointing the finger. That guy. No,
what,
it was me.
What was on your mind, Matt, as you got this going?
I wanted to be able to produce some content today that everyone that's listening can relate to. And so we all want to be the best version of ourselves, right? We want
to be the
best investor that we can be. So I wanted to just throw out some ideas for you to mull over and think about as you walk down the path of investing. And one of the things that I started with was investing in things that you understand.
Right. Oh, that's okay. Like the Warren Buffett truism. Actually, you know who I think originally said that?
Who?
I think it was Peter Lynch.
Really?
Right. So for those of you that don't know, Peter Lynch, I think if I remember right, was the number one. He managed the Fidelity Magellan Fund, which was the number one performing fund throughout the decade of the 1980s, I think. Might have been the 1990s, but I'm pretty sure it was the 80s. And one of the things he was famous for was invest in what you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he invested in things that were back in the 80s. You know, you're like, well, why would that? He also, I think he was the guy that came up with the term bagger, like a 10 bagger is when you make 1,000% return on your investment. You know, a 20 bagger would be a 2,000 because it's, you know, a one bagger is I doubled my money, but a 10 bagger is, you know, my $10 became $100. A 20 bagger, my $10 became $200, right? So that was what he was looking for, is how can I get these great investments? He also was the one that said toward the end of his career, it got really hard because he got really popular and money flooded into his fund and he started running out of places to put it.
That's a good point.
Different animal. Probably relevant, by the way, when you think about the size of firm you work with and what's going on. Because oftentimes we talk about the way we invest as a firm, where we like to buy individual stocks for our customers, right? Mm-hmm. But it looks different at a scale when we're managing, you know, somewhere between $1 and $200 million versus when you're managing between $1 and $200 billion.
Right.
Yeah, there's a difference there.
That's a different game. So... All right, so anyway.
Yeah, there was a quote there that I thought was worth throwing out, and it did actually come from Warren Buffett, and he said, "Never count on making a good sale. Have the purchase price be so attractive that even a mediocre sale gives good results."
That's an adage for real estate too, right?
Yeah.
You make your money in how you buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's true.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you said invest in things that have value.
Yeah.
Is that not the quintessential definition of investing?
Right? Yeah. Like, I mean, and it kind of ties back into the first one, though. When you think about it, investing in things that you understand and that you know have value. Because I've had people propose, like, hey, you should invest in this. And then I say, well, what is it? Right? And they're like, well, and they can't.
Magic.
And they can't put it into words. And I'm like, well, then how do you know that it has value? Like, you have to know what you're investing in, and it has to have something of value to it.
Tricky one, right? I see on your list one of the couple that you say have no value. And before I get to those, I would ask you, value to whom?
Yeah. Because if someone is willing to pay for it,
right,
then it has value. Yeah.
Now, I don't know who coined this phrase, but I use it a lot, and it's the bigger fool theory.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I caution investors out there, beware the bigger fool theory. Justin, do you know what I'm talking about? Right? Like, you can buy it at any price as long as
somebody
there's
else
a bigger
will pay for
fool
it,
to sell it to.
Yep. Yep.
So that's the issue is, and I think this was on your list. Like, so what are some things that have value that we figure have value, right?
Land.
Yeah, tangible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I can stand on that. That's a thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think one easy way to define it is something where, you know, almost at any given point, someone's going to line up to buy what you have to sell, right? Like, it could be land. It could be...
tulips.
It's going to be that kind of day.
Yeah.
Huh? So the thing about value, when I think about it, is, and again, let's think like investors for a minute, okay? Mm-hmm. Value is, it can be recognized or it could be potential,
mm-hmm.
okay? But it's also in the eye of the beholder, okay? To you, that real estate may be really valuable. To somebody else, it's useless. So you have to, I think it's, is there going to be other people that agree with you too? Now, that sounds a little like the bigger fool theory. And maybe it is, mm-hmm. but maybe it's not, right? When you consider the preponderance of what's going on here. And what I mean is the weigh all of the evidence. Because here's an example. You have a company like And again, I'm going to say this one. This isn't a recommendation. Okay, like, so don't go buy this just because I talk about it. But ARM processors, ARM, okay? My understanding is they don't actually manufacture processors. They own patents and design protocols to build processors. And then they farm those out and other people build
them. So it's basically just intellectual property.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that value?
Yes, yes. Because you could sell the patents.
For a while, right? Patents expire. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, there's value, but that's
less tangible
than real estate, right? So I understand why investing is complex. Okay. Some of it is, but let's follow this. And why is it get so confusing, right? We could confuse the computer when we say, well, it's, you know, if there's value, it's an investment, right? Was there value in crypto?
I mean, there was for a really long time.
Yeah. And the answer is it depends on who's willing to buy it, right? Mm-hmm. So value is a little ambiguous at times. It's only valuable if somebody else wants it. But is that the bigger fool theory? It depends.
That's a good question.
Right? It depends.
The short answer is probably.
Well, we hope not, because one of the things that really drives me nuts about investors or about people's, you know,
like they, mindset they, towards investing.
Well, you hear this about investing. It drives me nuts. We're going to have to take a break and we'll unpack it. But here's what it is. They say, oh, it's just gambling. And I go, oh my goodness, what? So if you think investing is just gambling, stick around because we got something to talk about. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Justin Brugman.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN and 93.9 FM and all the stations. We'll be right back.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gig. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show with this important reminder. If you missed the first segment, all the most important stuff that we already said then was said then. Right? Now the next most important stuff will be said next, so you shouldn't leave. But if you want to learn what we said, podcast. It will be recorded. You can see it tomorrow. That was the most ridiculous way to plug a podcast.
Well, you did it, so that's all that matters.
You can shame me later for it. So just check out the podcast. You know the cool thing about it? If you don't get to subscribe to the show with any regularity, right? Or like if you don't get to listen with regularity, then you can go to like iTunes. You can subscribe, and it will tell you when we post the new ones, right? And that way you get like the most recent shows, and you can – all the shenanigans. It'll all be there, right? And I think we even cut the commercials out.
Yeah.
So there you go. You could compress the time down somewhat. And then you can also see, like, why were they talking about something and they never came back to it after a weird break? Well, we're coming back
to this
one.
Too many sidebars.
Matt.
Yes.
Justin.
We're here.
Investing. Is it gambling?
I would say it depends.
It depends on what you're investing
what
in.
What you're investing in.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's have some fun with this, right? I'm going to play the role of the cynical audience member.
Okay.
And you will be the financial pro for a minute. What do you mean it depends?
Well, if you're investing in makeup, is it really that much of a gamble? Because women are going to continue to use makeup.
Matthew Dixon, ladies and gentlemen.
There you go. My wise advice for the day.
Nailed it.
So, okay, that would be something that we would say is kind of a staple. I'm going to try to corral this a little bit. All right, so I'm going to still bring back the original question, though.
Uh-oh.
When is investing gambling?
I guess you could say does it have value or not, or is it just...
Can you give me an example of something where you're like, you don't personally feel like it has a lot of value? Is there anything in that realm where you're just like, I don't know that. Like for me, I know that the NFTs, right? Like for my own personal self, I can't go invest in them because I look at it and I'm like,
I love this because Matt is walking into my, it's not a trap, right? But it's a framework that I want people to think about for a minute.
It's personal in a lot of ways.
I think it's definitional and it's important, okay? If you think your investment is a gamble, it was never an investment in the first place.
Right. That's a good way to say it.
Speculative.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not an investment if it's a gamble.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's okay to speculate.
You're just trying to get the language clarified so that people know what side of the fence they're on.
I think it's really important because, right, because anymore we live in this world where people will try to manipulate the language. Mm-hmm. And so let's just talk about what it is, and then we can talk about what it isn't, right? So investing is the expectation of a return, right? Okay. Now, if the probability of a return is lower than the probability of a loss, that to me is speculating. Okay. That's how gambling works, right? The casino loses sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
They pay out sometimes, but the odds by structure are in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
And then by gambler behavior, even more in their favor.
That's why they give you a room.
Yeah.
So I mean, you continue.
And cheap food.
Well, there's even more to it than that, right? What is going on there is something called emotional reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Think about this for a minute. Have you ever just received a gift unannounced or for no reason whatsoever from somebody?
Yes.
Right? You get something, and then what happens?
You have to give something back.
Right. Now I got to do something nice for them, too, or it's going to drive me crazy because the scale's out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
And so the casino gets that, too. It's like, well, we need a couple things. We need them to feel good, and we need them to perceive that we've delivered value to them, mm-hmm. and we need to encourage them to stick around, too, because we need a chance to win our money back.
Right.
Right. So there's a lot of good reasons for that, but it kind of works on that theory of emotional reciprocity. So all of this to suggest that I think it's okay to speculate,
mm-hmm.
right? But I think that needs to be managed, right? If that's why you can say things like lotteries are not for investment purposes.
Right.
Well, duh, because by definition, the probability of loss is significantly higher than gain. And if you're out there going, yeah, but if you won, like, yeah, but if your odds are still effectively zero, you're not going to win. Well, somebody wins. All right, it's true. You have 100% zero odds if you don't play,
mm-hmm.
but you also have 100% odds of keeping the money that you didn't flush down the toilet that way. And this is also relevant with $1 billion-plus Powerball right now or whatever, right? But if you won, that'd be really something. You're right. But your odds of 1 in 66 and some odd million are effectively zero.
Right.
Right? It's funny, if you were in a room, like there's no room, like it'd be like saying, well, I'm going to try to be the winner between everybody that lives in New York and California, right? Just all those states, mm-hmm. pick me out of every person here. And you go, that's pretty astronomical odds, right?
Right.
And yet people will
hand over that $5.
Well, they'll do it because you're saying there's a chance,
right?
Right. It's not technically zero, even though it's zero. So there's that. Okay. This is where I differ from Derek, who comes on the show too, because he's like, well, you know, I'm buying a dream. Like, all right. Well, however you want to frame it.
Yeah.
But it's speculating, and he knows that. It's like it's not going to impact me, and I'm willing to do it. Great. We're cool. Okay. Right. Just don't think it's going to work.
Right.
Okay. Same reason, like they would not build a casino if they didn't figure it was going to work, right? Like nobody would. So I wouldn't be an investor if I didn't think it would work.
That's values, a good way.
Value is a lot easier to track when it starts to become really broad spread. And this is where we get into the nuance. Is it possible, like, again, not a recommendation, but we'll just use a stock as an example. Is it possible that Microsoft could go out of business and you could lose all your money as an investor?
Yes.
If you were totally in Microsoft.
Yeah. Yeah, if you were 100% all you owned was Microsoft, is it possible?
Yes.
Yes. Is it probable?
No.
Probably not.
No. And it's not probable because of a million kabillion reasons we could like talk for the rest of the show and not run out of time to mm-hmm. the reasons. Okay. But it's not zero. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that the stock could go down significantly
and stay suppressed for a really long time?
Sure.
Yeah.
And those odds are higher than it going to zero.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So there are lots of things that could happen. Okay. And there are no guarantees in the world. But it's one of those where you go, well, if you got 95% odds mm-hmm. that it will work and 5% odds that it won't work, those are really good odds. Mm-hmm. Those are investor odds.
Right, and then you can take it even one step further and say, what are the odds that over the next 10 years, Microsoft is worth more in 10 years than it is today at this moment in time?
And mm-hmm. and the odds are very good for so many reasons, mm-hmm. right? Now, the question is that the best choice?
That's
or
really
the
question.
Or could you go somewhere else and do better?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, and now you're getting into the investor game, okay? And then we could talk about some of the things that I think are on your list about being an intelligent investor, which is things like, what are strategies to improve the odds? Okay. Mm-hmm. This comes back to the emotional compass mm-hmm. I referenced versus the logic compass and how we think through investing.
Yep.
Okay. So Matt.
Yeah.
Justin,
mm-hmm.
the intelligent investor, I see on here, one of the things it says is make your money work for you.
What does that?
What do you?
Yeah. What does that mean to you, Justin?
Well, I mean, especially you can go a year like this year is, you know, having no matter how much of money sitting in cash, you're losing purchasing power because of inflation.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
And yet, may still have been the best option.
Right.
Yeah.
How crazy is that to think you could have put the money in the mattress, lost purchasing power, and still been better off than being in the market?
Right.
Do you think that's a permanent circumstance?
No.
I don't. I think that's very low probability that this lasts mm-hmm. forever.
Because, I mean, as inflation grows, right, like, you would think that the value of the company would inflate, too, a little bit.
I would think so.
Yeah.
So I have this basic premise that I throw at people when they say the end of the world is coming. Okay. And one of them is, do you plan to stop eating forever?
I would surely hope not.
No.
Okay. I mean, like, if you plan to stop breathing too, okay, then you're not part of this discussion any longer. Okay. But if you plan to keep eating and breathing, then what you're saying is, all right, my life's going to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to spend money.
Yeah. There's two things to keep in mind. One, there is an activity to support living. And if you're not farming on your own to produce the food somehow, then you're going to have to acquire it. And that means that there's going to be work and trade mm-hmm. in order to get there. If that mm-hmm. happens, it is in everybody's best interest to preserve a functioning exchange system.
Right.
So like, oh, well, the dollar's going to disappear and it's all going to be fiat and it's all going to be gone. And well, it's already fiat. But it's all going to implode. We're all going to be, you know, back to trading clams and feudal system. Like, unlikely.
It really is. Because at what point are you going to quit going and buying things with the dollar?
Well, it's people forget things like it's super convenient.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's super convenient. And then you get into the really extremes. And I could say, look, everybody, if you listen a long time, you know, we talk about like, okay, so I'm a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant dude, right? There, said it. So, you know, Christian dude, I know what the end of the Bible talks about. Mm-hmm. But when people start saying things like, well, you can't use money anymore because it says in Revelations, and I'm like, okay, I think there might be a stretch here where we're not just in the deep end of the pool. Like, we're in the drain. Like, that's not even relevant. So, the dollar's the Martin. Okay, stop. Just stop. Let's not reinterpret things to serve a narrative here. Let's instead be really pragmatic. I'm more concerned about clumsy government decisions because it's short-sighted and self-serving, positioning us where the U.S. dollar is not attractive as a global reserve mm-hmm. currency anymore, and then the rest of the world gradually migrates toward that effort, which will ultimately diminish how effective the currency is. And that would have a negative impact. Like, quality of life changes mm-hmm. because of that, because we're going to lose purchasing power and so forth. I think that's real, but I think the idea that we're going to stop using money.
Yeah, and then how?
I think you're out to lunch.
And the government always wants to get paid, right? Like when the government's forced to, on the verge of having to shut down, what do? They just write themselves a check and keep the government going, right? Like they want to get paid. The government needs money. You can't just get rid of the dollar because then how are they going to finance their own agenda?
You have to give enough incentive for everybody to still run the machine a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
My larger concern, okay, and this, wow, are we off the reservation for a moment here? But this is my larger concern about political ideologies that suggest, well, nobody's ever done communism right. And I go, yeah, that's the point. Right. Like, take a look. We've tried this before. We've never really gotten it right. It's like because human nature doesn't tend that way.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Because disproportionate effort. This is the idea of like, well, why doesn't everybody get the same playing time on the sports team? Right. Because some people are more talented than others.
Right.
Well, that's not fair. I don't care about fair. That's their gifting. Right. And it's why some people are swimmers and some people are runners and they don't achieve both typically. Right. Because they're different.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is you just can't make everybody the same, and so it doesn't work, right? And you can't keep the incentives at play because that's not what motivates humans. So all this to say, I think there's a huge incentive for capitalism to save itself.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. And if so, the probabilities, if I had to play them out, are like, then I would invest more like there's a probability of eventual recovery than anything else.
Right.
Because you know what? If I'm wrong, who cares? Our money's all worthless and it didn't matter anyway.
Right. Right. It's
but,
true.
But if I'm right and the 99.9% chance plays out, right, or better, it's kind of like the lottery thing. You can guarantee the loss or you can keep the money. Then you can, because again, statistically, that's how it plays out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this case, I'm going to play the stats. I think that I'm still willing to invest in quality companies. And then we just need to talk about how do we do it.
Right.
Mm. All right. So My quiz to you guys, what are some things that people can do to become more intelligent investors after the obscene profit break we have to take right now?
Okay.
All right. I'm going to make you think about this during the break because our listeners got to know. We need can we come up with five?
We can.
Let's shoot for five tips and tricks that every investor needs to know. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
Justin Bruggeman.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, music's playing. We get to talk some more. Welcome back, crew, to the True Wealth Radio Show, where Justin and Matt have promised me that they have got at least five pro tips for the intelligent investor.
David, we're fired up. We're ready to go.
All right. And I have to remind everybody before we do this, okay, the disclosure is like you can give tips here, but these are not necessarily with personal context.
Yes.
So I will be careful about like don't go just do something reckless and be like, well, I heard the guys on the radio and it's their fault. No, don't be dumb. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, but let's hear the tips first, and we'll see if we have to do any more disclosure than that. Who's got number one?
I've got this, David.
I'm ready.
All right. So my tip is don't get greedy. Don't get greedy because we can get trapped in this mentality of like chasing the highest return. And that can burn.
If I'm a long-term investor, what does that mean?
If you're a long-term investor?
Yeah, if I'm going to buy it and hold it for 20 years, am I going to be
greedy?
Well,
here's the problem.
Okay.
If you come out of the gate super greedy and you're investing in maybe some companies that are more speculative, say you get burned early, right?
Okay.
You could end up losing out on the potential to invest in a company that has a little bit more of a slow and steady growth pattern. So I'm saying just don't get overly greedy. Put all of your money into more speculative investments and then hamper your ability to grow over the long run.
All right.
Now,
you just told me back to that original premise too of like, hey, if you get greedy, you could find yourself speculating instead of investing.
Yeah.
And that could burn you.
Yeah.
So like the don't, can I add to it then? Don't get greedy and lose sight of your investment objective.
Yes.
I like that. I like it. Justin.
I'm going to go with build a risk appetite.
A risk appetite.
So
I had a big lunch. It's false, but what do you mean by a risk appetite?
Understanding what your risk tolerance and what your, you know, your expectations of losses versus gains.
Walk me through a little bit about what that means.
It's the upside downside exposure that you're willing to take over a specific period of time, I guess.
So if I've got $300,000 and I just cannot bear the thought of losing $1,000, then my risk is
pretty darn low.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm doing for our listeners right now is just making sure that we have full context. Everybody that's listening, understand that most investments, if they are at risk, can float both up or down in value. And so what you're suggesting is you should sort of know in advance how much you're willing to let something float downside mostly.
Right.
Because I've never seen anybody mad about, like, I can't believe how much money I made. That's just terrible. I've never heard that.
Yes.
But I have heard the opposite of, like, man, the markets are down. This stinks. Mm-hmm. Why is my account losing money? So sort of develop a risk appetite. And you're talking about, like, what's the tolerable amount of downside or fluctuation that you could stomach?
In a, you know, defined kind of time frame too.
Okay,
that's a good point, Justin.
By the way, everybody, those subtle but super important, right? If you are willing to let investments fluctuate, but you're watching it like by the minute, you're not investing.
Justin just tipped me into my second point, which is patience is a virtue. And good things come to those who
wait. Number three on our list, but number two on Matt's list.
Yeah, that's right. Number two on my list. Patience is a virtue.
We had to get to 10 now. Five each, huh?
Right. Oh, man. Five each? Patience. That wasn't part of this. This was five overall. But yeah, no, patience is a virtue. So good things come to those who wait. But I'm also going to play the flip side of that coin and say, don't be afraid to realize when you made a mistake and get out of a bad investment, right? Like, don't be so anchored to something that you can't see objectively. Be able to move on. Yeah. If it has.
So how do you make that decision? This is, I'm going to ask you this and I have something in mind, but I'm really trying to play Socrates here. Because that emotional compass can get pretty erratic here. So how do you look at an investment and determine whether it's good or bad?
I think one of the pieces is, before you invest, having a set of boundaries, maybe, right?
Okay.
Some guardrails of saying, well, as long as the investment is within this, you know, set of numbers, I'm feeling pretty comfortable with that. But, you know, if it starts to dwindle way below that point, and it's been there for a while, maybe you just need to accept the fact that the ship has sailed and it didn't produce the way you expected it to.
I'm gonna leap in here and say something too for the benefit of our listeners, because this is a litmus test, okay? Not a guarantee that this works, but it's a good litmus test, okay? One of the things that you want to be careful of is what is commonly referred to as anchoring bias, right? It's the idea that, well, I bought it for this price and now I'm lower and I don't want to lose money, so therefore it's changing my decisions or so forth. Mm-hmm. Pretend for a moment, and this is very hard to do. It requires tremendous mental discipline, okay? Pretend that you don't own it and walk in as if you had money in your pocket. And the question is, would you buy it today?
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
If you had money in your pocket, is this investment interesting today? And if the answer is yes, then that's a good indication, not a guarantee, but a good indication that your anchoring bias is swaying your decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If the answer is no, I wouldn't buy it today, first you need to make sure you're not hung up on your anchoring bias, right? But that would be a pretty good way to sort of check that emotional versus logical compass. Okay. So anyway, patience is a virtue. I agree. We're three deep on this list.
No, we are.
I'm going to go with consistent investments.
Consistent investments.
So
are you talking about what you buy or how you buy it?
When you buy it.
When
and
you
how
buy
often
it.
You buy. Say, right. So going into the dollar cost averaging instead of, say, you know, when you're, say, large sumps, say on large lumps, say on annual basis, you're kind of playing the timing game because of
right.
when
and
that money's
coming. The top or the bottom,
right.
if it all chunks in at once.
And so if you're making consistent investments, you're getting the swings up and down and buying cheaper on down markets and buying you know, more expensive on up markets, but you're averaging a better long-term price.
You know what makes that cool,
price.
Too? The emotional compass really isn't even in play.
Right.
Right, because you're just, look, this is the program. If the markets are down, mm-hmm. I'm putting the same amount in this time as I did last month, and this month I get to buy more because it's on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And then next month I'll buy some more, and then the month after that I'll buy some more. And what you'll do is you'll keep accumulating, and if the price of something is getting lower, you're accumulating more at a
right.
cheap price in anticipation of price recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Can I add my fourth point right here? This is a perfect time for it.
Yes, you can.
So this is going to sound really simple, and someone's going to be like, really, that's your advice? And I'm going to say, yes, it is. Diversify.
Really,
if you
that's
keep,
your advice?
Yeah, it is, because if you just keep dollar cost averaging the same thing over and over and over again, what if it doesn't climb higher? What if you just keep buying the same asset over and over and over again, and it just keeps going lower?
Yes. I mean, I think that that is
and
a
people,
huge strategy point. Right.
And remember, it pains me, David. People will say, hey, I really think I should put my entire IRA into gold. And I
yes.
hear it often. And I'm just like, oh, but what if gold decreases in value and you need the money? And
well, no, because if everything collapses, gold will still be there and I can use it.
Yeah.
Then I go, are you going to put it in a safe somewhere?
No.
No, hold we're going to put it somewhere. Well, then how are you going to get the gold that you own?
Mm.
I hadn't really thought that.
They'll take a picture of it.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts me. It pains me, David.
Well, I really think this is a separate note before our last point. That first of all, you're right. I think diversification is a good strategy because you don't put all your eggs in one basket for lots of reasons. We talked about it many times. When somebody comes to me and says, I want to put everything in gold, that really is, to me, there's a bit of an emotional cry at
mm-hmm.
that moment because you're done investing if you're willing to throw all the rules out. Right, you're
yeah.
saying at that point, I'm willing to concentrate in a single asset
and speculate.
I'm willing to give up on all of the other marketplace elements of capitalism. I'm like, I'm throwing in the towel and just hoping that I can somehow preserve things by dumping everything into this one spot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or the flip side is the cry for help, where it's more like I'm putting everything into one position, and you go. Equally disastrous, but for different reasons,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it makes it binary. It's an all or nothing event. It either
mm-hmm.
works or it doesn't. And if it doesn't work, you're sunk.
Yep.
Okay. So I agree that diversification is part of it. And when I hear somebody tell me, I want a gold IRA, and I'm like, why? Right? Because you need to unpack this with me. That all of a sudden, we got some head trauma as an investor to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Justin, point number five.
Lead us home, Justin. We need one
I'm
more.
I'm going with the amazing advice, start early.
Start early, yeah.
Never underestimate compound interest.
That's
start, yeah, early and often, right? Just like voting.
Jeez.
So that joke never gets old.
No, it does not.
So, yeah, I mean, that's it's certainly, if you have that opportunity,
mm-hmm.
yes. What I will tell you is for many people, that could be really demoralizing. If you're like, but I didn't start early. Now what?
Right.
Well, you should have started earlier.
Mm-hmm.
No kidding. Thanks for the help, jerk.
What would you say to that person, David?
I would say it's not too late,
right.
but it changes. So what happens is your risk appetite goes from what you're comfortable with to what you have to do.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you're just backed into a corner and go, well, I don't really want to do this, that, and the other. Said you can either guarantee failure or you can change your risk tolerance
and
in
give
order
your chance
to,
because
if you're on a track for failure anyway, it's like, well, do you want 100% track of failure or less than 100% track of failure?
Right.
So you're just playing the odds again, but it is tricky. What I will say is, we're not going to go into it on this show today, but the concept of like the retirement rescue is still possible, but it's less likely to occur with the stock market.
Ooh.
Right?
Can that be next week's show?
You remind me, we can bring this back. I continue to believe the stock market is fantastic because it's liquid and it's easy and it's super, super passive. Like, you don't really have to do anything but put the money in there and let it do the work for you. But if you are way behind the power curve of time, you may need to inject sweat equity into the equation, and you can't do that in the stock market the same way. So there are other things that one can do that can still potentially help to mitigate like lost opportunity. Doesn't guarantee it, but again, we don't have time today. What we do have time for, though, is our last obscene profit break. So stick around, gang. We got to take this one, and then when we come back, a couple final thoughts. I think we could squeeze one or two more investor tips out of Matt and Justin here. And let's not forget our financial terms, but we got to take this break first. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Justin Brueggemann.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Don't forget, you can get caught up on the podcast, which is cool, right? It'll be there. So go to our webpage at littlejohnfs.com, and you can get all of the fun updates here. But we are on the home stretch today, and Justin and Matt have joined me in studio today, which is been fun, and we are going through tips for the intelligent investor, okay, which means if you're an idiot, don't do these. Right? Perfect, right? If you're not intelligent, then you don't have to do these.
Well, what if they find themselves in a position where, like, crap, I've been doing a lot of these things. What, you know?
Then they clearly they're intelligent-er, right?
Yeah, okay.
So it's an intelligent pirate, exactly. So what do we do? We had five. Right. What's the summary? Five points. One of them was don't get greedy.
Mm-hmm.
Number two was develop a risk appetite.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Number three was
don't chase the highest. Don't chase the highest return.
Right. And number four was dollar cost average.
Correct.
And number five
was super lame.
I thought it was diversified.
Okay.
That was amazing.
And number six.
What is number six, Justin?
Ooh.
Yeah, we've given out our five little nuggets of gold.
Okay.
David, you know, we've given five. I think it's your turn.
Yeah, you want me to rattle off five too?
No. I just want you to give us one. Like, put one in there that we haven't talked
well,
about.
Well, I think I snuck one in there that is you can check your emotional compass by saying, would I still buy something today? Right? Mm-hmm. If I walked in, would I buy it today? The other thing is, I would suggest that when Justin mentioned, but I think you should time bind some of your decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other is I wouldn't get married to your decisions. Okay.
Right.
Things do change, right? And so it is okay to change. One of the things I would suggest also is when in doubt, a third party perspective can be useful. Right. This is kind of like you can't give yourself dating advice. Right. You're just too into it. You're going to do dumb stuff. Sometimes you need somebody else who's not caught up in that emotional hamster wheel looking from the outside in to help you have a level head. OK, that's the benefit of having a third party advisor. You don't have to work with a financial pro. Right. You really don't. I tell this to people all the time. You know why financial professionals exist? Mostly because people don't want to, or they're afraid to, or they don't have time to. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess if they're afraid, that's the same as don't want to. That's just the reason you don't want to, right? But it's either you don't have time or you don't have the desire, okay? Because the tools are actually available, okay? Now, it's debatable whether or not a financial professional will produce a superior result, specifically in the investment landscape. Right. Because believe it or not, it's actually really hard to outperform some of the major indexes. They're pretty well designed. They have a good way of recruiting in the new players that are decent and firing the ones that aren't. Mm-hmm. And they bias to the ones that are working. So it's actually very hard to outperform that structure. It's a good structure. Nevertheless, there are some things that you do give up if you're just trying to like buy the index, right? You give up some control from a tax perspective,
mm-hmm.
okay? The other thing is you give up the ability to lean into one direction or another,
right?
Okay. The reason, though, that I think from a financial professional perspective, let's pretend that you can't get performance from like investment performance. Like you're not going to get outperformance from a financial professional. Well, let's just assume that's true. And then worse than that, it's going to be a financial lag. It's going to cost more. Mm-hmm. The problem is you don't know about the mistakes that you could avoid that may cost mm-hmm, even more right. than what you would pay them.
That's
and that's
true.
Where most people make the mistake is that unforced errors are the most costly, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, that's true.
So that would be my final tip is avoid unforced errors. And you could do that through having a good team surrounding you and having an accountability structure.
What if someone needs a good team?
They call us at 541-375-0898. Before we punch out, we have our financial term of the day. This one is fun. Connectication.
Oh, boy.
Connectication. All right. So what does that mean, Justin?
Ooh. Connectication.
Connectication.
In 10 seconds.
Is where you connect all of the right stocks in the same year and you just slay. You just killed it. It's yeah. Connectication.
Just connect four.
Like connect four.
All right. I'm gonna define this as connectication is when you sell one investment to purchase another while intentionally harvesting a tax loss.
Ooh.
All right.
Okay.
We got
to
run, gang.
Why'd you
We're
have
out
to
of time
one
for
me,
now.
David?
Until next time, how do they reach us? 541-375-0898. Justin, Matt, thanks for joining us. We got to rock. This has been the True Wealth Radio Show on News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.